Hello again. Apparently, the recording app I'm using will cut off my lecture at 30 minutes. Noted. So this is part two. We're going to continue with our discussion of syllabus. And I think I closed off the last episode with a conversation about flauts or flying thoughts, right? So these are, again, I think I'm pretty sure I defined it. So these are, they just maybe you hear a song, you smell something, you're just driving, you're walking, whatever, like, and something just hits you, right? We might have some flauts that are, let's say habitual, like there's a pattern, and those warrant our consideration. And that's a part of what it means to do philosophical meditation. I'll do an episode where I talk about that practice more specifically. And we're really learning how to talk to ourselves, understand ourselves. We're learning how to see different parts of our minds, different parts of our souls, and that's really meaningful for dealing with flaws, because a flaw can mess you up, right? Or it could encourage you, right? I mean, you can have positive flaws as well. I get for me, like a negative flaut, and this is another bad analogy. I'm looking at my window here. Kind of like pigeons, like pigeons, generally speaking. I'm not sure who's from New York listening to this, but as a New Yorker, as a New Yorker my whole life, my relationship with pigeons is like usually I don't want to get involved, right? By usually I mean I just don't. Like some people feed pigeons. I get that. I can see how that could be relaxing. I've never done that. Power to you if you do that. But generally speaking, though, if I'm walking down the street, I'm seeing a pigeon, I'm not really gonna like I see it, like, oh, there's a pigeon there. I'm not gonna approach the pigeon, right? And if the pigeon like flies away, I'm not gonna follow it, right? So that's kind of like a flaw, right? They're kind of walking around, they fly, whatever, right? You can choose to acknowledge the flaw, and if it's not a positive one, see that it's there, right? And just kind of learn how to maybe even walk alongside it, because sometimes pigeons do that too, right? Walk alongside the pigeon. And then kind of let it be there and not let it bother you, right? Or you can, maybe follow it with your gaze all the way up. And even that, right, the idea of ascending. Because when we talk about especially something like anxiety, which has come up today, it might start off as a flaw, a little idea, and you'll just spiral on it, right? Which is to say, you'll look at the pigeon, oh, not great, not really a fan, all right, cool, it's here. And then instead of letting it fly away and like looking somewhere else, you just keep looking at it. Well, that's you looking at the anxious narrative. Or any other type of negative thought as well. It's learning how to focus, right? Tell me what you focus on, and I'll tell you who you are. So if you focus on anxious narratives, you'll be an anxious person. So stop staring at the pigeon. That's the third not great analogy I've done. Okay, we're gonna work on it. We're gonna work. Okay. Let's keep going with the syllabus a little bit here. Okay, we're getting into some points that I think are really interesting. Once again, a number 12 here. This concern for living in the service of the human community and for acting in accordance with justice is an essential element of every philosophical life. This is a great idea, and I apologize about this. I may have a, well, I don't, I, I'm, it's not a mic situation, I do. I have a tendency to really ground a lot of our discussions in daily life. I will try my best to also provide other examples. But for me with this, like, this maps perfectly to the idea, like if you're practicing philosophy, you're able to question yourself. And if you're practicing philosophy, you're able to pursue and embody virtues, right? So being just, being fair is a virtue, right? It's virtuous to be just towards other people. And for me, I can think about this just on a daily basis. Like for myself, if I'm having a bad day, sometimes I'll unjustly be rude to a family member or to a friend or whomever, right? Or I'll be unjustly rude to myself even. If I got bad news at work or at school, what have you, right? I'll start treating myself in a way that's unfair. Well, philosophy is going to help us, again, question that and realize this isn't what we should be doing. Now, of course, we can connect it, as I said, to both ethical and moral development, as always. And I think this is a great piece to remind us that that moral development is really important. Service of the human community. If you carry that with you in everything you did in life, right? If you saw and really on a daily basis, you were striving to embody the idea that what you do on this earth with the way you work, your job, and the way you love others, what you offer to the world, if you really were striving to be in service of the human community, how might your life be different? Right? So one thing we're going to talk about in the next, one of our early conversations on cultivating and pursuing purpose is that you don't want a job. You don't want a career. You want a vocation. A vocation will keep you full because it's the most fulfilling. So vocation involves two things. Once again, that's recurring a lot today. It involves doing things on a daily basis that give you a sense of personal fulfillment, but also doing things that are of service, that fill some type of public need. So all these things connect, right? So the philosopher, and vocation doesn't even have to necessarily be a job. You could have a vocational approach to a hobby. You could have a vocational approach to being, once again, being a friend, being, you know, a member of your family, being a significant other to somebody, right? You want to get personal fulfillment, and you also want to, again, offer goodness and service to the world. You want to feel useful, because that also is very rewarding. You want to treat others justly. That should be your reward in and of itself. To treat someone fairly should in and of itself, once again, without even necessarily requiring anything in return all the time, should make you feel good. I did the right thing by this person today. Philosophy helps us get there. Because again, we're managing ourselves. That daily example I gave of treating a family member unjustly when you're upset or when you're angry, well, philosophy is going to help us talk to our anger, deal with it more effectively, so we're not carrying it with us. It makes it easier for us to treat others justly. So we're not, because we're not blinded by our anger. It's not really, let's say, your sibling asking you to help them that's aggravating you. It's something else that happened. All right. So let's move on here to the last part of our syllabus. I'm going to highlight this. This is a great reading. I do ask that you read the syllabus for homework this week. From Epictetus is The Art of Living. I'm just going to highlight a few points here. But this is sort of our mission statement, right? Once again, Epictetus, Stoic philosopher. He himself was a teacher, right? A famous teacher. And he described his school essentially as a hospital for individuals who were sort of suffering from what we would characterize as like philosophical or spiritual, emotional, let's even say, for argument's sake, pathologies, right? So you went to his school to become more patient because your impatience was torturing you. You went to his school because your desires were torturing you and you constantly felt unfulfilled and you felt maybe even envious or jealous even, right? So you went to his school to learn how to deal with these things that are very real, right? These things torture us. So he believed that you would go to his school again. It was sort of like he would be a doctor giving you prescriptions. Try this practice. Read this. Tell me what you think. Let's talk about it. Let's see how we can interpret it and then apply it to our lives so we can get rid of this stuff, right? And here are some key points I'd like to highlight from this idea, right? Philosophy is intended for everyone. That's great for this class, right? This is an introduction or an introductory course, right? It's a course where a lot of us are coming from various disciplines. That's a beautiful thing, right? And Epictetus, this is like 2,000 years ago, is agreeing with me, right? It's intended for everyone, and it is authentically practiced only by those who wed or connect it with action in the world towards better life for all. So once again, that emphasis on serving the human community. Don't just act selfishly. Try to benefit the people around you, right? Once again, if it's truly beneficial, if it's authentically beneficial, which is to say, once again, it's not doxa, it's evidence-supported thinking, because you've asked yourself questions, you've cultivated that capacity, and you've gathered evidence, that's what we should be doing here. Philosophy's purpose, this is major, is to illuminate the ways our soul has been infected by unsound beliefs, untrained tumultuous desires, and dubious life choices, and preferences that are unworthy of us. How do we figure this out? Self-scrutiny applied with kindness is the main antidote. That's what our philosophical meditation sessions are. And again, we're not meeting synchronously, but I do ask that at the very least, when I post the episodes, you take 10 minutes to sit down with a pen and paper and scrutinize yourself as kindly as possible. Now, of course, and we'll talk about this, sometimes you don't want to be kind with yourself. There are times when you have to be, let's say, a little bit tough on yourself, and that might get you to what you have to do, right? That might get you to the goodness you're searching for. Of course, that being said, generally, try to be kind to yourself. Also, don't not scrutinize yourself. Don't not examine yourself. It's important to make sure you're doing what you think you should be doing, as per your own definitions. Okay? A little bit more here. We get into some, let's say, some examples of practices here, right? The skilled use of logic, disputation, and the developed ability to name things correctly are some of the instruments philosophy gives us to achieve abiding clear-sightedness and inner tranquility, which is true happiness. This happiness, which is our aim, must be correctly understood. Happiness is commonly mistaken for passively experienced pleasure or leisure. That conception of happiness is good only as far as it goes. The only worthy object of all our efforts is a flourishing life. So this is, I think, a really key point that we've maybe, or let's say in the past as philosophers, have misconstrued, right? Happiness is not the real word, let's say, for example, in Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. That's a bad translation. The ancient Greek word we're thinking about here, and I'm even thinking about changing the name, one of the names of the chapters in our book that we're going to talk about, because it's on happiness, it's called. I don't like that word. I don't like that idea. I think happiness is great, but happiness is not our main goal, right? The main goal, or let's say, should not be our main goal if we want to lead as healthy a life as possible. The ancient Greeks had a word, eudaimonia. We're going to watch a video on this. It's a great idea, right? This is, again, give you a general day one understanding of it. It's more about fulfilling your potential, leading a meaningful and fulfilling life. That's what it's about, right? So within that, because it's obviously, it should already be clear, like, that's a fuller understanding of what life is than simply saying, I just want to be happy, right? Eudaimonia makes room for happiness, but it also makes room for suffering and pain in the pursuit of actualizing our potential, which is meaningful. And the pursuit, another part of eudaimonia, sort of is like leaving something, or let's say leaving the world better as a result of our presence in it, as a result of our actions, right? Which once again connects to his idea that, and this is right from the syllabus, the only worthy object of all our efforts is a flourishing life. That's what eudaimonia is. It's the pursuit of flourishing. Right, so that's bigger than happiness. It's more profound than happiness. And he tells us even here, he gives us a little more information on happiness, I think is very useful. True happiness is a verb. It is the ongoing dynamic performance of worthy deeds. The flourishing life, whose foundation is virtuous intentions, is something we continually improvise, and in doing so, our souls mature. So we see already, right, virtuous intention, it's a very cool idea from the Stoics. I'll keep this brief. But the Stoics love the idea of archery for the following reason, right? As an archer, it makes sense to have the intention of hitting your mark, hitting your target, right? If you don't have that intention, why even show up, right? So the idea for the Stoics, again, is that the power of focusing on what we can't control, what we cannot control. The Stoic archer, with everything in their being, wants to hit the target. Whether, again, metaphorically, the target's truth, or the truth, a truth, the target is doing the just thing, the target is inner peace, the target is discipline, whatever, right? Okay, so you have to have that intention. You have to know yourself well enough to know that these are my intentions and I stand by these, right? That being said, and this connects into a conversation about eudaimonia being greater than happiness, right? The archer plants their feet, the archer pulls the bow back, holds the arrow, right? They can control large portions of that intentionality, right? Once they release the arrow, though, they cannot control the wind. They cannot control if it starts raining. They cannot control if, for some reason, the target moves. They cannot control any of these things. So once you let go of the arrow, which is to say, once you move from intentions into action, into the external world especially, things become out of our control. That is when our happiness, if we allow it to, gets damaged. That's your study for the test, you study for the test, you control your thinking, you control your intentions, you get there that day, it's a different set of questions. It's not asking you about what the teacher said they would ask you about. How do we learn to be indifferent to results that are out of our control? Now, indifferent doesn't mean, let's say, numb. We should learn from them, of course, but even that learning, the Stoics would say, we are creating the intention to learn, and we're working with the best of our ability, the best of whatever free will we have to learn. That's more in our control than the actual result itself, right? Eudaimonia makes room for failure. Whereas, you know, well, not even makes room only for failure, it makes room for the feelings that often and most easily accompany failure. Happiness doesn't, it's too narrow, right? So another point here, we're moving on a little bit from different ideas here. Our life, we have to strive for this, our life has usefulness to ourselves and to the people we touch. Great idea. Like I said, ethical development, moral development. Here we are. We become philosophers to discover what is really true. We got to pursue truth. It's important. Again, internal truths, external truths. Got to do it. The questioning method is a part of this, right? We have to make sure, this is a great set of ideas he's saying here, right? We have to learn what is merely the accidental result of flawed reasoning. Our own thinking's messed up. We have to question it. Is it messed up? Recklessly acquired erroneous judgments. So to acquire an erroneous judgment is like acquire or to assimilate or, let's say, adopt an idea that doesn't make any sense. Okay, well-intentioned but misguided teachings of parents and teachers, hugely important idea, right? Questioning those that came before us and really asking, right, what of what they've offered me is true? What of what they've offered me What of what they've offered me is useful? Right? We should learn how to question things before we accept or reject them. We want to move past, we want to make sure we're not making assumptions, basically, right? And unexamined acculturation. We have to examine the acculturation. How has our culture impacted us, right? We have to examine these things. And then he finally ends with this really powerful note, right? To ease our soul suffering, we engage in disciplined introspection in which we conduct thought experiments to strengthen our ability to distinguish between wholesome and lazy, hurtful beliefs and habits. Beautiful point. Thought experiments, that's how we'll look at listening to this. That's how we'll look at our writing, our reading, and also our philosophical meditations. All of these can be viewed under these things, right? To ease our soul suffering. Great way to end hit that piece. And two other questions that the translator Sharon LaBelle provided, which I think are great, that she describes as, you know, sort of being of the utmost importance to Epictetus. How do I live a happy, fulfilling life? Again, happy, but also fulfilling. And how can I be a good person? So, this was a good, that was a good conversation about the second half of the syllabus. Now let's get into the first little bit, all right? So as an asynchronous course, there's gonna be two things that we're doing in terms of writing. We have short take-home written exercises that are between 250 to 500 words, which pretty much is 1 to 2 pages, right? So this is on page 2 of our syllabus, and I do, once again, strongly suggest you take a look at it. So just to explain this a little bit. You choose one of the three options I give, right? So once again, every week you'll be getting listening to, you'll be getting pages in our bibliotherapy book, or one of the other two books to read, and that'll be the fuel for your responses, right? So I suggest that you either, one, choose a question from the Philosophical Meditations book and use a quote or idea from our bibliotherapy book to address it. So that's simply, I meditated, this question interested me. Oh, this quote helps, let me explain it, and then apply it, and we'll talk about a strategy for that in a minute. Number two, choose an interesting or meaningful quote from the bibliotherapy books. So maybe a question didn't really stand out to you. Choose a quote, right? Elaborate upon it. We'll talk more about that again in a second. Or maybe create your own question or questions and work to pursue them with sections or quotes from the bibliotherapy book. So the only real common element of all these things, aside from the fact that they involve the same set of books, is that I ask that you always include direct textual evidence. And that's very important, right? I show you how I would like for you to cite it. I need you to quote from a philosopher, so we're getting into the practice of interpreting and getting into a dialogue with another thinker, right? So we have to make sure we do that. We have to make sure we hand it in on time. And again, for me, I was very open about my struggle with grammar. I asked that we please read over our essays, use Grammarly. It's a great free resource to help with some punctuation stuff. We have to make sure we're writing with clarity, right? And the assignment's already been posted to Blackboard, so I ask that you upload it to Blackboard before midnight every Sunday, all right? So the way to approach this, we scroll down to our syllabus to page 3. We'll see a section called A Suggested Approach to Our Readings. We're answering the following questions with the reading, right? And this applies to how we write as well. What does it say? That's the quote. What does it mean? That's you interpreting it. How can I apply it to my life? That's you making it real, right? And by my life, I want to make this clear. Please never think you have to write in the first person, right? Feel free to write in whatever voice you want. You never have to talk directly about yourself. Of course you can, but please do not feel at all obligated to do that, right? In the writing. But I do suggest in your thinking and in your philosophical meditation writing, which I will never collect, you do write from the first person perspective. And the fourth one, why does it matter, is kind of a greater elaboration upon how you would apply it, right? So, okay, so this quote is saying, for example, to strike balance. Well, what does this mean? Well, it means you have to avoid excess too much and avoid deficiency or being deficient too little, right? So how can I apply it to my life? Well, I could definitely do this or that more and do this or that less to lead a healthier life. And that matters because I want to, let's say, create more time to move forward in life in X, Y, or Z direction. And why would balance matter in general? Well, according to Aristotle, right, balance is like the virtue. We should always be striving for the golden mean. And that matters because if we had more balanced lives, maybe people would be happier. People maybe would be more productive. People maybe would have a greater sense of eudaimonia. So you kind of unpack it, right, with those four questions. So that's that. That's as simple as it is, right? Again, if you have questions, feel free to let me know. I look forward to reading these. That's how we'll move forward. So each week you'll hand those in. I'll give those a read. I do have a lot of students, so here's what I would like to say as well. If you would like, let's say, specific feedback or to have a conversation about how your papers are going, please feel free to email me. It's the beginning of the semester. I'm very new to the online format, so I'm still getting used to this slight increase in written work. I think it's a good idea to have a weekly practice for a number of reasons. That being said, if we were all in class together, I would not likely be doing weekly assignments. So I'm going to be sort of experimenting with how I'm going to keep up with it. So if you ever want more feedback or, again, to have a conversation, please email me. We'll set up a meeting or we'll go back and forth via email. All right. Of course, there will be, or we should definitely have a conversations around midterms, right? Be posting grades and or reach out to me for more specifics. So that'll be a time to check in as well on that. But yeah, please always feel free to email me because, again, I'm getting used to this sort of format as well myself. Then we will also have a final take-home written exercise, which is longer than our weekly take-homes. And no surprises there. I'll give you the handout, which describes it, which will be a collection of prompts weeks in advance. We'll talk about it together and then we'll prepare for it. That'll go well. Okay. Below the final take-home, we have a quick note on email communication. I will do my best. Please do not ever take it personally if I don't respond like right away. I check my email pretty much 5-6 days a week in the morning, and then about 3-4 days a week, I'll also check it at night. So, you know, I'll do my best there. But again, I'm teaching a lot of classes in the online format. I get a lot. Please, it's me. It's not you. Don't take it personally. And also feel free to resend emails, all right? I won't get offended by that or annoyed. I get it. Below that, a brief note on our schedule. I want you to shape the class. So I have a few episodes, again, these two being a couple, that I'm going to just give to you initially. And then I think I'll lead the class a little bit while I'll do the opening conversation on cultivating and pursuing purpose. It's a chapter in our book. Definitely warrants mentioning. And then I would love to have the class. Everybody, please email me. Let me know what you want to focus on the most. Take some time and maybe look at the chapters in the book. If you go to our bibliotherapy book, there's a glossary or index. I always get those confused. At the beginning of the book, there's a list of the chapters with the titles that are really self-explanatory. So let me know which topics interest you all the most. I'll make sure I put those earlier in the semester and make sure we spend enough time on them. If there's ever an essay you want to cover that we don't, once again, tell me, I'll lecture on it. So just as much as possible, please, I want this to be a student-directed course. I've done this in the past, and it's been much more engaging for everybody, and I want everything we do to be useful for you. So let me know what you all want to focus on the most, and I will definitely be as responsive to that as I can possibly be. All right. So that's it. All right, thank you all for listening. Hope this was useful. Again, keep your eye out for a couple other episodes. I'll be emailing all of you soon with some homework, and have a great week. Thank you.